the Richmond Term Voices podcast, brought to you by Paycor, stress-free software built to help HR leaders recruit, manage, pay, and develop their people. The Richmond Term Voices podcast is the voice and pulse of the Richmond, Virginia HR community with your hosts, Tiffany Fortune and Gray Martin. Subscribe to the Richmond Term Voices on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Download episodes at richmondterm.org. We are excited to introduce Dr. Shirley Davis, an accomplished corporate executive, global workforce management expert, a certified leadership coach, and a master of reinvention. She brings a high energy, high content, and high value message to audiences all over the world. She has over 25 years of business experience in a variety of senior and executive leadership roles with Fortune 100 companies and served as the Vice President of Global Diversity and Inclusion and Workplace Strategies for the world's largest HR membership association, the Society of Human Resource Management. She is the President of SDS Global Enterprises, which is a full-service consulting firm that specializes in providing solutions and strategies for achieving leadership excellence and in building high-performing and inclusive workplace cultures where all talent can thrive. Best-selling author with a recent best-selling book, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Dummies. Dr. Davis recently served as our Richmond Term keynote speaker for our 8th annual Diversity and Inclusion Symposium, Rebuilding Mindsets Through Diversity of Thought, held this past May. Dr. Davis, welcome to the show.
It is such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me, Tiffany. It's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to keep the conversation going on what we started with the keynote.
This is so awesome. I have to tell you, I'm a bit nervous. I don't normally get nervous and I love talking, so I don't know what's going on here, but I shared with you before, this is a surreal moment for me. I think the first time I met you was via LinkedIn. LinkedIn Learning in 2018. So I have been following you for a long time that I cannot believe this is really happening, to be very honest with you.
Are you standing right now?
This is extremely a fan moment for me. So if you hear the little shaking in my voice, this is surreal. So
look, I'm honored that you are following me. I'm honored you took my courses. Look, I don't bite. Let's just have fun.
That's awesome. Wonderful. Thank you.
We've been so excited about the energy. We know you're going to bring to this conversation. The symposium was my first introduction to you, and I loved your keynote. I was jotting down all of these pithy sayings that you were saying to us. One of my favorites was, you know, there are those who make things happen, watch things happen, and those who wonder what happens. I mean, obviously you're one of the people who make things happen. So this is great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
In our last episode, we explored well-being trends when several effective practices that employers, HR practitioners can act on to support employee needs and enhance their total employee experience to combat the Great Resignation. Yeah. Today, we are going to continue the conversation on rebuilding mindsets through diversity of thought. June has become an incredibly significant month in America. Yeah. Companies are exploring ways to recognize Juneteenth and National Pride Month. In recognition of both, we are excited to hear from our best-selling author of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Dummies, actionable ways we can create an inclusive and diverse workplace for employees. So let's dive in. Dr. Davis, first tell us about your motivation behind writing, I'll say DEI for Dummies.
Actually, you know what? I'm honored because John Wiley & Sons, which is actually the publishing company, they have been publishing the Dummy series of books for nearly 30 years. And they came to me last year in the middle of me writing another book. And I released that one in August. It was Living Beyond What If. And that was all about how we need to become a better version of ourselves, how we need to truly reinvent ourselves and really walk in our superpower. I thought, wow, I don't have time to be writing another book, but I couldn't pass that opportunity up because they wanted me because of my 30 plus years of experience, having worked in every area of HR, having been a chief diversity and inclusion officer for a number of Fortune 50 and Fortune 10 companies. And they're like, we want someone who's been in the, who's been on the front lines, who's got their arm, you know, got their hands dirty, and they really understand this from a business perspective, a workplace environment, and can truly speak it in a practical sense that is aligned with the Dummies brand. You might even say, well, why would we be writing a book called Diversity, and yet it's for dummies? Because sometimes people are like, well, that's an oxymoron, right? That's insulting. But not when you look at the source and the brand and the reputation of the company, right? I had to look at that same thing too. But it's not utilizing it in a very derogatory way where we're calling people dumb and stupid. And it really is learning made easy. And I think all of us can probably say we own a book for for dummies, whether it was cooking, whether it was cleaning for dummies, love for dummies, science for dummies, right? We all have them. But I am thrilled to have had the opportunity to write it because it was for leaders at all levels. Particularly, they wanted me to write it not for chief diversity officers, but for leaders, line leaders, supervisors, all the way up to the board level, and speak in their language of those who don't do this every day, but really need to understand that it's their job, their responsibility, and their opportunity to commit to DE&I and to building those kinds of cultures.
With such a broad audience, you know, line leaders all the way up to C-suite, you know, how did you approach the building blocks of learning for DEI to span that breadth of application in a company?
So I had to think about what are some of the most common issues that line leaders are facing, but that's also common to senior leaders, executives, and boards. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, some of the key things around the demographic shifts. Everyone's having to deal with this new generation of talent and the fact that the workforce looks different today, and it will continue to look different in the future. And all of us have to learn how to work across those differences. The other thing I did too was to listen to the conversations that's been going on, both from the employees who say, I wish my leader knew this, or I wish my leader understood this. And then looking at some of the common issues that keep getting companies in trouble with their brand, with their culture, with the ways that behaviors are allowed to happen. And so when you look at it from that perspective, I came to the middle ground to say, what's common to most all of us? But knowing this work and having done it for so long, I also said, what are things that if they don't know yet, they do need to know? And at some point, they're going to need to reference this. So, Gray, I didn't approach it to say it's a read it from cover to cover. I approached it that this is a reference guide. This is a roadmap. And I even looked at it like the Bible of DE&I. And at some point, you're going to need this. Use this as your reference guide.
What are some of the common pitfalls that you are trying to help steer all of those leaders around?
Yeah. Well, one is all the myths around DE&I and what are some of the underrepresented or historically marginalized talent feeling and what they need. The other pitfalls is, you know, constantly looking at diversity as something that doesn't include them, but recognizing that this is about all of us. All of us are diverse in so many different ways, both what we see and what we don't see. But also some of the other common pitfalls is the recruiting piece of it and recognizing that there is talent that's out there. And this doesn't mean you have to lower your standard. This doesn't mean that now you got to pick, you know, they always say we want the best and the brightest and that's who we're selecting. But when we talk about diversity, for some reason, we talk about diversity or we are doing more gender diversity work. All of a sudden now it's like we hired the best and the brightest and we don't want to have to lower our standards only when we're talking about diversity. So it was to dispel some of those myths. It was also understanding the real business case. Some of the pitfalls is that leaders don't see this as an important part of business. There is a strategy as a way to help them innovate, as a way to better serve their customers, as a way to grow and expand your business, and as a way to continue to stay relevant. That's all a part of it. So I hit that in there too. And then I hit on even for boards. How do you diversify as a board? Because some of the times the pitfall is that they think because they're at that level that they don't have to do this work. And what we're saying is, yes, it's every level, every leader's work to do this. So there's a lot of those kinds of pitfalls that I was able to address in here. Even when do you hire a diversity officer? What if we don't have enough money or the budget or the resources to be able to do that? Then how do we do that? How do we build a culture of inclusion and equity and have that mindset? So all of those things are pitfalls that oftentimes are misunderstood or underutilized or sometimes just not used at all.
So during your keynote, you talked about leading across differences. And it's funny because I was sitting here following the conversation and I was thinking about the Harvard Business Review that I referenced early on, and I was going to go really into it, but you just covered everything. And really the reason why is that the quote from the Harvard Business Review was, "Leaders must acknowledge that increasing demographic diversity does not by itself increase effectiveness. What matters is how an organization harnesses diversity and whether it's willing to reshape its power structure." Mm-hmm. And that's what you just touched on, you know, how we really reshape our power structure and really harness diversity throughout the organization. So I want to now kind of get into some more of those actionable ways and kind of continue kind of getting, you know, getting some of these nuggets out to our team. But again, I go back to the keynote. You shared with us at that time when we focused on leading across differences, some perspectives and concepts.
You know, one, I was going through a number of the significant demographic shifts and disruptions that we're experiencing both today and by 2030 and 2050, what we'll see. And what I was relaying is that if you want to lead effectively across difference or even work effectively across differences, is that we have to think about the needs of the new generation of talent, right? When they're coming in now, and we're seeing now what we're experiencing is very different than I did when I was running recruiting 20 years ago. Needs are different. Expectations are different. Work ethics are different. Values and personality types and styles, as well as your worldview and your thinking styles are different, and your communication. Those are sort of that six aspects of how we need to be thinking about this, both from how we acquire talent, how we engage and develop and grow and support talent. But if you want to retain that great talent and you want to get the best work out of them and the best ideas, we got to learn that everyone brings something different to the table. And that's the value and the, I would say, the greatness of our uniqueness, is that we're not all the same. But when you bring all of those together, the needs, the expectations, and the ways that we work, our values, our personality styles, when you leverage all of that, there's great research out there that talks about how companies really do get better return on investments, better return on their sales, better return on their equity when they have created a more diverse and heterogeneous team versus homogeneous team. So there's value in that. There's a lot of great substantive results that you can get when you bring all of that together. But those six key elements are really important. And all of us need to do our work in making sure that we can embrace those differently and be more accepting and more accommodating of people who are different from us.
During your keynote, there was a lot of conversation, chatter in the chat around the passing the neurodiversity and passing off as neurotypical. And I'll be honest, this was a new aspect of diversity for me that you brought up. So I'd love to kind of dig into that a little bit and kind of get your thoughts on neurodiversity and how we start incorporating that into our action and even just our vocabulary from my perspective.
You know, it's interesting. We're starting to talk about it more publicly, but it's not new. I mean, neurodiversity, the movement started like in the late 1990s when we did start talking about, you know, increasing acceptance and inclusion of all people. When we started saying, bring your full self to work. Yeah, if you want me to bring my full self to work, then that means I get to bring my unique perspectives, ideas, but also my identity. identities, my beliefs, and the ways that I learn, the ways that I engage. Neurodiversity really is about, it's the idea that people experience and they interact and they process information very differently. You know, with the world around us in different ways, we all have to recognize that people think, they learn, they behave different, and that our brains are designed that way. It doesn't make us, you know, different in the sense that we can't engage in the ways that we can't bring value. It just means that we oftentimes have a different way of processing that information. And a lot of times it started even on the autism spectrum as that part of it. But now it has grown to include ADHD, ADD, bipolar disorder, PTSD, and a number of the other aspects of neurodivergent. It's interesting because what research tells us is that 1 in 10 people actually is neurodiverse, and particularly with ADHD. And then I was really, really startled when I saw that 1 in 100 people have autism. 1 in 10 people are dyslexic. And then thinking about now the fact that more entertainers, celebrities, and world leaders are identifying as neurodiverse, which is destigmatizing it a bit, taking some of that taboo momentum out, right? So Bill Gates, Justin Timberlake, Elon Musk. Elon Musk is ASD, right? Mariah Carey is bipolar disorder. Albert Einstein, dyslexic. Steven Spielberg, dyslexic. Richard Branson, right? Dyslexic. And look, even when we talk about, you know, Michael Phelps, right? The Olympian. And now you're hearing us talk not only about neurodiversity, but another aspect of difference is people with disabilities, particularly mental illness and mental well-being. Those are all conversations that we're now needing to have in our organizations because people are more stressed than ever before, burnt out. They're having greater levels of anxiety. It means something in the ways that we show up every day and what we need relative to support, the trust that needs to be there for us to feel comfortable even sharing our unique identities, issues that we're facing. All of those are very important.
How do we approach, I mean, because being open and I love, you know, you're talking about the platinum rule, treat others the way you want to be treated. Yeah. It's not the golden rule, it's the platinum rule. And to be a good listener, yeah. I mean, all those things, just be a good human. But at the end of the day, if you're in an organization, there's only so much, we can't tackle every permutation.
That's right.
of learning and executing styles. I mean, we have to keep the wheels on the bus and keep going forward, right? Yeah. So how do we find that balance of working with individuals to kind of meet them where they are, yes, while still being productive in the aggregate? Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, you have to look at DE&I as a part of your organizational values, as a part of your organizational DNA. It should be a part of your performance goals and objectives. It should be it should become normal as a part of how we work together, how we treat each other, how we get things done. It should be incorporated into your decision making, right? It should be a part of how you think about your future, your skills you're going to need in the future, but also the kind of workplace that you want today and in the future as well. So when I talk about this, I know that it can be a competing priority, right? Sometimes leaders feel really overwhelmed, like I can't do all of that kind of stuff. And I'm helping leaders to see that if you can just show up every day and do some of what I call the small, free micro behaviors, like smiling, like inviting people's opinions and not cutting people down and minimizing your biases and the microaggressions of the things you might say and do that cause people to feel devalued. If you can just do some, as I say, these are things that are what I consider common sense, but I'm finding that they're not common practice, right? So when I talk about these we talk about microaggressions, but I also talk about micro behaviors. It is, you know, just speaking to a person, asking them how they're doing, checking in with them, being really observant, assuming positive intent, listening to understand instead of listening to respond. When people think different than you and they challenge that status quo, don't cut them down. Don't embarrass embarrass and blame and shame them in public. Because if we say we want your unique ideas and perspectives, it might not agree with yours. So we want people to feel that psychological safety enough to share what they're feeling and thinking and their perspectives, even if it may be different. And I can tell you that when you bring that level of diversity of thought and you treat people with that level of courtesy, dignity, and respect, they're more apt to do better. Their performance is better. They come with better ideas. They engage more and they won't turn over. I'm trying to make it easy. It's not like it's going to take a whole lot of money. It doesn't take a whole lot of time. Sometimes it just takes a lot of intentionality and commitment to just make some of those small tweaks every day as a leader and as a professional.
Intention and positive intention. I mean, yeah. It was something that you mentioned in the keynote that I really liked and really, really resonated with me is that, you know, people are not intentionally out to get you. We're all here. We're learning this. We're all learning. No one's going to come to a conversation and say the right things 100% of the time and know the right things 100% of the time. And so give each other space to learn from our missteps and learn from each other.
Every one of us will make mistakes. Even those of us who are considered global workforce experts, those of us who are chief diversity officers, those of us who are in HR, I still make mistakes. I still have those faux pas. I still put my foot in my mouth. But the way you learn to do that is you acknowledge it immediately, or as soon as you know better, you then acknowledge it. You take ownership of it. You apologize for it. My hope is that people will assume positive intent. And like I do, I make them teachable moments, right? It's like, I don't believe that what you just said was done in intentionally malicious, but let me share with you how that landed with me. Let me share with you how that affected me. I'm not saying you dumb, you stupid. I can't believe you said that. I'm saying, no, let me share with you how I heard that, and then give a little bit of understanding and maybe even some history of why, you know, that bothers me. And then just to say, you know, if in the future, here's a way that I'd like to be approached. Here's the way I'd like to be responded to. Here's the way I'd like to be called out. Things that you had mentioned early on, and I wanted to hit on that, was this being Pride Month, this being Juneteenth Month, what is it that organizations can do? Because, you know, quite frankly, it's a new thing for a lot of companies to be acknowledging Juneteenth. Now it's a federal holiday, and more companies realize that if they don't do something, that's going to be a problem for a lot of their employees, and not just their people of color or Black people, but a lot of advocates and allies want that too. So I wanted to just kind of share a few things that could be done for both Juneteenth and Pride Month as well.
We'd love to hear from you some ways that our listeners and our HR practitioners in our community can create an inclusive and diverse workplace for employees, especially around this significant month in America, recognizing Juneteenth and National Pride Month, just as you've said.
Definitely love the fact that we now are talking more about Juneteenth, because it's always been something, you know, in the Black community, it's always been an important milestone for us, but it should be something every day we're talking about, just about the history, the journey, and what we still need in order to feel more included. But for this month, for Pride and for Juneteenth, I think we have to keep conversations going. I'm loving the fact that people are leaning in and having more conversations, listening sessions, just about the struggle, just about the history of it, and just understanding even today, what's the current state? How are our organizations now embracing more, not only Pride, but yes, Juneteenth as well? Acknowledging the fact some organizations have also followed the lead of the federal government, which has made it a holiday. So they've given employees paid time off. They're also hosting community service events and projects that are in underserved communities, but they're also doing it and particularly with festivals and parades and that kind of thing, celebrating Pride Month as well as Juneteenth. I've also seen companies donating millions of dollars to Black-owned businesses and to also to charities and even to college funds, providing scholarships, and even some of the social justice and economic equity funds and organizations that really lobby for those kinds of things. And then I've even seen, you know, with this month too, it's also The colors for Juneteenth is red, black, and green. There's some real history for that as well. So even allowing, I've seen companies having decorating contests and allowing people to come with costumes and stuff like that to dress up. And then some are doing movie days. So there's a lot of great things going on. But I would say the worst thing that you can do in this current climate is not to do anything, not to acknowledge it, but recognizing that we have so many of our individual workers that are not only celebrating Juneteenth and Pride, but our allies, our advocates, and all workers really want to learn. They want to lean in and continue to have these conversations, and they truly want to build their DE&I knowledge and understanding.
Thank you. I do. One of the things that I'm really excited about this month is not just the reflection and opportunity to educate others, but I really think that we have an opportunity where we have these two promising lights, right? These two promising lights that are, I think, oftentimes pretty much in a dark pathway. So we have this opportunity where we're looking at securing human rights and equality and belonging among groups. And there's a history there. There's a connection. There's a reason why Juneteenth and Pride Month are celebrated side by side. And I feel like a lot of people miss that connection, how Pride Month and that call to action was brought about by an African American that was looking to be accepted as they were in a transgender space. Wow. So there's so much more there. There's so much history there. And I thank you for giving us some actionable ways in which we can continue to bring this to our teams, our corporations, organizations, our families, and continue to educate in just so many ways. And it just doesn't take much, just small ways for us to have that opportunity to really educate, reflect, recognize, and celebrate our differences.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Davis, thank you so much for your time. We really enjoyed speaking to you and taking a look at your LinkedIn. I know that you are keynote speaking it up. What is anything on the horizon of which we should be aware our listeners could engage with, any upcoming symposiums of which you're a part of, or another upcoming book of which we should be aware?
Look, I think I'm done with, I've released two books in a year. So the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion for Dummies book that just came out in January, that is still hot off the press. And I would encourage everyone, please get a copy and make sure leaders all around the organization have a copy of it as well. My next project that I'm working on is I've got an upcoming Certificate of Mastery in DE&I. So we're offering it virtually. It's August the 10th, 11th, and 12th. And so you can spend 3 days with me, 4 hours a day. There's pre-work, there's post-work and homework, but those three days will be taking a deep dive into what it takes to truly lead DE&I in your organizations, both as a practitioner, as well as a leader, an ally, and an advocate. So that's my next big one as well, too. And then I'm writing a couple of articles, one for Fortune magazine and one for Harvard Business Review.
That's great. Well, we will definitely include the link for DEI for Dummies in our show notes, as well as for your upcoming masterclass.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. This has been a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to Richmond Sherm Voices podcast with Tiffany Fortune and Gray Martin. If you like our show and want to know more, subscribe or check out Richmond Sherm website at richmondsherm.org.